This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Check your plastic shaming at the door. All of us use plastic. There's no way to avoid it, and it's not our fault.
The United Nations Environment Program estimates that each year a staggering 20 million tons of plastic waste is dumped into the world's oceans, rivers, and lakes. That's the equivalent of about 2,000 garbage trucks dumped into the globe's waterways every day. This week on Sea Change Radio, we're speaking with Judith Enck, former EPA administrator and current professor at Bennington College. We discuss her recent book, The Problem with Plastics: How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. We examine some of the alarming stats associated with what seems to be a never-ending rise in plastics production and consumption, talk about how relatively little plastic is actually recycled, and delve into some policies and practices that can help stem the plastic tide. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Judith Enck. Judith is a professor at Bennington College at the Center for the Advancement of Public Action, and her new book is entitled The Problem with Plastic. Judith, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Thrilled to be here.
We've covered lots of plastic issues over the years here at Sea Change Radio, but your take is a refreshing one. You try to tackle it from a lot of angles. Why don't we first start with some of the obligatory stats of how inundated with plastic we are?
Sure. I want to start by saying none of us voted for more plastic. Nothing tastes better in plastic. And yet the amount of plastic that is generated every year for multiple uses is on the rise. And because most plastic cannot be recycled, we are facing a crisis with plastic waste. So global plastic waste more than doubled between the year 2000 and 2019. And the future is not looking great unless we adopt new laws and new regulations to change the status quo, because global plastic waste will increase between 2020 and 2040 from 794 to 1,360 trillion pounds per year. So the point is, we're going in the wrong direction.
You mentioned in the book that there's approximately 2 garbage trucks full of plastic that get dumped into the oceans every second.
Yeah.
And that's before the explosion you're talking about, the increase that's due in plastic production.
Yeah, it's the status quo, and we are turning our ocean into a watery landfill. And when I first heard about this issue of plastic in the ocean, which quite honestly is what motivated me to start my organization called Beyond Plastics, was the impact on the ocean. I mean, this is very, very serious. Remember that nearly 71% of the Earth's surface is ocean. And the way the plastic gets into the ocean, at first I thought, oh, is it just ocean-going, you know, vessels that are illegally dumping? There's a little of that. And you also have a lot of what's called ghost gear, abandoned fishing gear. But most of the plastic in the ocean comes from the land. So someone may be walking down the street in their city, a hamburger wrapper gets away from them, or a plastic water bottle gets away from them. It's litter. When it rains, there's a good chance it gets into the storm sewer, which drains into a stream or a river. All rivers empty into the ocean. So unfortunately, what happens is you've got a plastic water bottle, for instance, bopping around the surface of the ocean. It's exposed to sunlight, so it gets brittle. And then the wave action acts almost like a paper cutter. So one plastic water bottle becomes hundreds, if not thousands, of little pieces of plastic. And if it's 5 millimeters or less, it is considered a microplastic. And that's what we're concerned about. Most of the plastic in the ocean falls to the sea floor, and then it gets eaten by fish, sea turtles, seabirds. It builds up in the marine environment. And remember, a large percentage of the world relies on fish from the ocean as a major source of protein.
And we often hear, well, plastic is recyclable. So, these plastic single-use bottles for water that I'm using right now, it's not a problem because I'm putting it into the blue recycling bin. But what's the reality, Judith?
Well, putting material in your recycling bin does not at all mean that it gets recycled. So I'm a big supporter of recycling. I started my town's recycling program. So everyone should keep recycling paper, cardboard, metal, glass. Please compost your yard waste and your food waste if you can. But we need to recognize that plastic recycling has been an abysmal failure. The plastic recycling rate is only 5 to 6% in the United States. And here's why. If you have an aluminum can, you can recycle that empty aluminum can into a new aluminum can. If you have an old newspaper, you can recycle that into a new piece of cardboard or writing paper. But plastic recycling is far more challenging because 16,000 different chemicals are used to make plastic, many different types of plastics called polymers, and then many different colors. So if you think of your own home or apartment, you might have a bright, hard plastic detergent bottle at your washing machine. And then you might have a black plastic takeout container in your refrigerator with some really old Chinese food in there. And then maybe you have a plastic bag somewhere, a plastic bread bag. Those three things cannot get recycled together. They're all different colors, all different chemical combinations, different types of plastic.
So when we throw them all into the same bin, what happens to them?
Most of it goes to the landfill or the incinerator. The only plastics that reliably get recycled because they have end markets are plastic soda bottles, especially if you are in a bottle bill state. There are 10 states that have refundable deposits on beverage bottles. So I'm a big supporter of state and federal bottle bills because not only do they prevent litter, but it keeps the material source separated and cleaned. It's not in your curbside bin. And then some plastic jugs, like a milk jug, could get recycled. But I would not put anything into your recycling bin unless on the bottom it says number one or number two plastic. Now, the people who know this, that most plastics are not by definition recyclable, are the companies that make plastic. This is not a surprise to them. And yet they have spent millions of dollars communicating with the public, telling us, don't worry about all your single-use plastics, just toss it in your recycling bin. They know most of it doesn't get recycled. They are deceiving the public, and the deception is so serious that California Attorney General Rob Bonta has sued the nation's largest plastic maker, which is ExxonMobil, for deceiving the public about plastics recycling.
You don't add up too much. Ain't got that glamour touch. You're trifling lazy. Ain't worth a cigarette ash.
Look out there, Mama. Look out there. You carry me too fast. Watch it, baby.
You're just my good for nothing. My sweet hunk of trash.
My, my, how you sound.
You're very short on looks.
Yeah.
Dumb when it comes to books.
Look out, baby, watch it, honey.
And you stay full of corn, just like succotash.
What you want me to do in my idle moments?
You're just a good for nothing but my sweet hunk of trash.
Let me get a word in there, honey. You running your mouth.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Professor Judith Enck. She is a professor at Bennington College in the Center for the Advancement of Public Action, and her book is The Problem with Plastic. So, Judith, we were just talking about the problem with recycling plastics. What about compostable bags and biodegradable plastic substitutes? They're not as benign as they seem either, are they?
No. Many of these so-called compostable plastics still contain toxic chemicals. They also only really degrade in a commercial high-temperature composting facility, which most communities do not have. So don't put this stuff, for instance, in your backyard compost bin, especially if your compost is used to grow fruits and vegetables. And also, you know, compostable, so-called compostable bags may be replacing reusable bags. You know, reuse is much more important than anything that's even mythically considered compostable. The sad thing is there are a lot of people who want to do the right thing, and they're shelling out extra money for these compostable plastics. And I think that that type of product is not necessarily environmentally sound.
But they're generally not made with petroleum, right? They're usually like cornstarch or something like that. So their problem lies more in their chemical additives and ingredients, right?
You're right. They're typically not made from fossil fuels, but they have chemical additives. But more than that, you really don't see them effectively being composted unless it goes to one of these high temperature commercial composting operations, which are very rare and don't exist in most communities. So it's a little deceptive.
Well, you were talking about the deception from big oil and big plastic. Why don't you talk about something that's tangentially related, which is the economic justice angle, where our most vulnerable communities are being exploited by these deep-pocketed interests?
Sure. So most plastic is manufactured in Texas, Appalachia, or a section of Louisiana that's known as Cancer Alley.
That's from like Baton Rouge to New Orleans?
Exactly. Yeah, these are mostly low-income communities of color where there's a concentration of plastic production facilities. And the pollution from these facilities are so significant that in Cancer Alley, for instance, the cancer rate is 7 times higher than the national average, according to a recent study from Johns Hopkins. So we have large numbers of people that are being poisoned by plastic production, so that the rest of us, for instance, have the so-called convenience of plastic when there are often alternatives to plastic.
And those people generally are not represented very well by either their politicians or in terms of legal action when they don't have the money to really launch a big class action suit. What are you and your colleagues at Beyond Plastics doing to highlight this inequity?
Well, for one thing, we dedicate the book to people living in these communities, and we are in touch with some people, certainly not everyone. We try to educate people that don't live in Louisiana, Texas, and Appalachia about these risks. And whenever we can reduce the demand for plastic in our own communities, in our own states, that is helping people that live in these sacrifice zones. I don't live in Texas or Louisiana, but if I can get state and federal laws to reduce plastic, that is a plus. And Alex, with your permission, I'd like to just read the very brief dedication of the book.
Please, please.
By design, low-income people and communities of color bear the burden of plastics. The destructive web of plastics gathers in their neighborhoods, rivers, air, and bodies. We dedicate this book to those living in the shadow of plastics facilities in Louisiana, Texas, Appalachia, and elsewhere, in the sincere belief that they should live in a world beyond plastics and that such a world is within our reach.
Very nice. Do we have some templates to look towards in terms of countries that are being more proactive than the United States in its fight to curb rampant plastic use? And I guess to some degree, abuse as well.
Yes, I think the European Union has much stronger policies than the United States. Germany, for instance, has had a long-term commitment to reuse and refill. So it's not just recycling of materials, but if you've got reusable and refillable beverage bottles, that really goes a long way in terms of reducing waste. And there are very strong laws on the books in Africa, but our information is that they're not effectively enforced. Washington, D.C. doesn't seem particularly interested in environmental protection these days. So we are wor mostly working at the state and local level. And toward the back of the book, we actually have some model bills and policies that people can try to get adopted. Some of it is modeled on what's happening in Europe.
So you have a section of the book where you talk about some of the policies that you would like to see become more universal. Why don't you talk about skip the stuff policies? What does that mean? And why don't you expand on how that could help?
So, who among us does not have a drawer in our kitchen that is overflowing with plastic utensils and napkins and straws that we never ask for? But if you get takeout food, even if you say, please skip the stuff, they automatically put it in the bag. That's only going to change when we adopt new laws to set it up so that you only get those utensils and straws and napkins and condiments if you ask for them. This saves restaurants money and is protective of the environment. I was recently in New York City where they have a skip the stuff law on the books, and I walked to the restaurant to get takeout. And I'm walking back. I'm like, oh, darn, I forgot to tell them no utensils. I was like beating myself up on the walk back. And I get to my son's kitchen table, open up the food. There's no straws, there's no forks, there's no condiments, there's no napkins. And I was like, oh, that's right. New York City has a law on the books and they enforce it and it works. So this was a really busy diner. They're saving a lot of money by not having to put all of that into takeout bags. And I was relieved of enormous Catholic guilt for not remembering to tell them to skip the stuff.
Yes, sometimes I am guilty of forgetting to remind a restaurant to not put all these utensils in there. My wife is very diligent about bringing her little kit that has bamboo, fork, knife, and spoon with her wherever she goes. And she's given those away as Christmas gifts to a lot of people. And it's actually a very cheap, terrific gift. But there seems to be some kind of stigma attached to it. It hasn't really been embraced by people on a mass scale.
I think you're right. I mean, people bringing their own reusable cups to coffee shops, that's kind of mainstreamed. People bringing their own bags to the supermarket. But yeah, we are a lonely crowd of people who carry bamboo utensils in our purse. I don't think I've used a plastic utensil in years. And the plus for me is I'm not exposed to the chemicals or the microplastics from my utensils.
Recycle it. If you think that you might just throw it away, remember it could live to see another day. Recycle it.
to see another day. Maybe it's a plastic bag, maybe it's the Sunday paper, maybe it's the bottle that you drank your soda from, or the wrap around a stick of gum. Maybe it's a soup can,
soup can.
Maybe it's a jar of strawberry jam, or the big container that holds your juice. It all can be put to another use. Recycle it,
recycle it,
recycle it. If you think that you might just throw it away, remember it can live to see another day. Recycle it,
recycle,
oh, recycle it,
recycle it.
Whatever you do, don't throw it away, make it live to see another day.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Judith Enck. Her book is The Problem with Plastic. So, Judith, we're talking about bringing in reusable mugs and things to cafes. We have changed a lot as a society in terms of those habits. I can't help but think, though, that COVID really set us back in a lot of our habits. We saw that panic, some of it well deserved, when we first learned about this deadly disease, that we needed to just shelve any of our worries about things like plastic and just, you know, focus on using as many masks as we needed and taking all of our food out in containers. And now that we're 5 years beyond the beginning of the crisis, do you have any data to point to that shows a rise in plastic use connected to the pandemic?
Yes. I mean, I could have answered this question a couple of years ago, but there was documentation that there was a substantial increase in the use of plastics worldwide. And remember, at the time, some people didn't fully appreciate that you got COVID from airborne exposure, not necessarily the surface of things, but we were all busy wiping down our groceries when we brought them home. I think some of that concern has been abated, but not all of it. You know, there are still a lot of supermarkets, for instance, who didn't used to encase certain things in plastic packaging, but they do now. So we're still kind of crawling back from 2020, 2021, when there was such a concern, legitimate concern, as you say, around COVID. But I think it's slowly, I think, you know, for a lot of people, they're not requiring that so much be covered in plastic in order to avoid COVID exposure. But it was a substantial increase in the use of plastic in 2019, 2020, 21. And then it went down a little bit. But overall, the use of plastic is significantly increasing.
So Judith, we were talking about these skip the stuff policies, which seem like no-brainers. But so many of these things seem like no-brainers until they become ingrained into our calcified brains. So if you had your senator, one of the more progressive senators in the country, Bernie Sanders, in front of you, and he was like, all right, Judith, what are the top five things that I can do to help set forth saner, better policies when it comes to our proliferation and reliance on plastics? What are they?
Well, Bernie Sanders should read our book, because we have 10 very specific policy recommendations, and we talk about model bills. We also say, check your plastic shaming at the door. All of us use plastic. There's no way to avoid it, and it's not our fault. So one is a national bottle bill would be nice, a national ban on plastic bags. New York State bans the use of polystyrene food packaging, also known as styrofoam, because the major ingredient chemically is styrene, a known carcinogen. So a number of states and local governments have banned polystyrene for food already. The federal government can do that. We would like to prohibit the intentional release of balloons into the atmosphere, because what goes up comes down. In the EU, they have banned plastic stirrers in beverages, something called plug sticks, which I was not very familiar with, but Starbucks has these pieces of plastic that they put on the top of your plastic cap in your hot coffee to make sure that minuscule amounts of coffee doesn't splash over the cap, also known as splash guards. So we should just ban all of those. But I do want to spend most of my time talking about a concept called extended producer responsibility, which has been in place in Europe and in Canada for years. So right now, you're a consumer goods company. You sell lots of plastic packaging to protect your product, and you have no responsibility for what happens to all of this packaging afterwards. You have no skin in the game to reduce that packaging or design it in a way that's it's reusable or refillable. So the theory behind extended producer responsibility is the companies that make the products pay a modest fee, with that money going to local governments to pay for proper disposal or recycling. In New York and New Jersey, we have modernized this concept of extended producer responsibility because fees on packaging to support local recycling doesn't help us on the plastic recycling problem. So our model bill requires a 50% reduction in single-use packaging over 10 years, and it's incremental. So it starts out 10% reduction in 2 years, 20% reduction in 4 years, etc. Second key provision is it bans the most toxic chemicals used in packaging. Your listeners might be surprised to know that packaging today still includes lead, cadmium, formaldehyde, PFAS chemicals. We want to ban the worst. Third, we have a very strong definition of recycling, so it does not allow for the polluting technology called chemical recycling or advanced recycling to count as real recycling. And there are other important details, but you know, we all grew up reciting reduce, reuse, recycle in a kind of sing-songy way. We never get to reduce and reuse. We're kind of still dabbling in recycling, and most of the money in the waste arena goes toward burying waste at landfills or burning waste at garbage incinerators. So the bottom two rungs of the hierarchy, bury and burn, get most of the money and most of the attention, and we want to change that.
The book is called The Problem with Plastic, and there's a website, beyondplastics.org, where people can learn about Judith's appearances talking more about the problem with plastic. Judith Ank, so much, thanks so much for being my guest on SEA Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SEA Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Boogaloo Joe Jones, Billie Holiday and Louis Armstrong, and Let's Go Green.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SEA Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SEA Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.